In his book, People Over Politics, former Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear discusses his 8 years in office, including the economy, education, the fight over same-sex marriage, and his role in implementing the Affordable Care Act.
Every stakeholder in Kentucky wanted a state-based exchange. All your providers wanted it. Your Chamber of Commerce wanted it. The business community, because they felt like that we could design our own exchange to fit Kentucky better than just a cookie-cutter kind of approach that the federal exchange was going to be.
On this week's Eastern Standard, former Governor Steve Beshear. It's a recorded show, so we're not able to take your comments today, but you can still offer them at weku.fm, in a tweet at WEKUEST, or on Facebook. Let us know your reaction to this program at 859-622-1657. It's time for Eastern Standard with former Governor Steve Beshear, right after the news from NPR. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen, and a special edition of our program this week, we have with us former Governor Steve Beshear. And Governor Beshear has just released his new book, People Over Politics. And we're going to talk with him a little bit about the book, about his term as governor of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and other questions that may come up in the course of our conversation. Our program is normally a live and interactive program. We did send out a message before this show asking listeners if they had any questions to send them along by Twitter or Facebook, and we have a couple of those we'll pass along. Who knows, others may come in during the course of our recording. Governor Steve Beshear, thank you for being with us on Eastern Standard.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
Oh, and thank you for welcoming me to your home as we spend some time here casually talking about your career. Let's talk briefly. Let's start by talking about this book, People Over Politics. I know you did this with your speechwriter, your former speechwriter, as who assisted you in the process of writing it. Tell me what this is all about, and why this book is so important to you.
Well, John, there's a lot of things in this book, but the main message is very simple. It's how we can make government work again. You know, there's no question in most people's minds that our governmental structure, particularly on the federal level, is broken. It's dysfunctional. This rank partisanship that dominates, the toxic environment that dominates right now, I think is a threat to our democracy, and it's slowly eroding our democracy. And the message in this book is it doesn't have to be that way. I know people tend to just want to accept that today. It doesn't have to be that way. I governed for 8 years here in Kentucky. I had a divided government. I'm a Democratic governor. I had a Republican-controlled Senate, a Democratic-controlled House. And, you know, we took a state over 8 years that has some real fundamental weaknesses. And we addressed those weaknesses, and we made tremendous progress toward moving and changing our quality of life for the better in Kentucky. And we did it on one simple principle. I got everybody to sit down and agree that we were Kentuckians first and Democrats and Republicans second. We put people over politics. And when you do that, and we didn't always do it, obviously. I mean, you know, there are times when things fall apart. But for the most part, we did that. And when you do that, good things happen. You can make good things happen. And so there's a lesson in this. There's a lesson for Washington, D.C. politicians. There's a lesson for Kentucky politicians that if you will put people first and politics second, then you can really get your job done and make this place a better place to live.
You served as governor for 8 years. Before that, you served in the General Assembly, and you're an attorney by practice, by profession. What prompted you to enter politics? Tell me the story of your interest in politics.
Well, John, it's an interesting story, at least for me. I've always wanted to be in public life. It's just sort of a calling that permeates through my family. You know, we grew up in a very religious home. My dad was a Baptist minister. And, you know, every time the doors opened on the church, we were all there. And they instilled, both mom and dad instilled in us the idea that, you know, you got to leave this place a little better than you found it. And if you do that, then you've accomplished your purpose in life. And so politics was my way of doing that. And I got started at an early age. I was elected to the State House of Representatives in when I was 29 years old in 1974, served three terms there, then ran for attorney general and won that, and then 4 years later ran for lieutenant governor and won that. So I was a real up-and-coming Democratic politician, and I was lined up to run for governor and did in 1987. I lost, you know, and it was a devastating loss for me because I just, that's what I'd always pointed to, and all at once I was done. And it was a tough time psychologically for me. Fortunately, I had Jane, a great wife, and I had two small kids that I had to support. And so I had to get back out there and earn a living, and got back into the law practice, got into some community banking, and did very well financially. But, you know, at the time I lost, I came across a quote from Teddy Roosevelt, the man in the arena. It's from a speech he gave in Paris, France, back in 1910. In that speech, he said, you know, it's not the folks that sit around and criticize who matter. It's the person who is actually in the arena, getting covered with dust and blood and sweat and striving to do great things. If he wins, if he comes out ahead, at best he experiences that triumph of high achievement. And if you fail, at least you fail while daring greatly, and that you'll at least never be counted among those timid souls who sit along the sidelines and never either win nor lose. And so I took some consolation from Teddy Roosevelt, a Republican, as a matter of fact, and got on with life. And then 20 years later, a group of us were just trying to make sure we had a credible Democratic candidate to run for governor against the Republican incumbent. And that November of 2006, one by one, everybody we were talking to decided they weren't going to run. And so a good friend of mine, Tracy Farmer, said, well, Steve, I guess you're going to have to run. And I literally joked with him. I said, oh, yeah, right, Tracy. I said, you know, bring about $10 million down to the firm tomorrow and I'll think about it. And he said, no, I'm serious. He said, you don't know what will happen unless you try. And he handed me a card. And guess what? Teddy Roosevelt's quote was on that card.
Wow.
He had no idea of how that quote had played into my life 20 years before. But and so I seriously thought about it, had a lot of long talks with Jane, my wife, and she ended up saying, if that's what you want to do, then let's go do it. And so I ran, and as luck would have it, I won in a seven-way primary, and then I beat the Republican in November. And I ended up being what I call the Lazarus candidate. Anybody that knows their Bible knows that Lazarus came back from the tomb. Well, I came back from the political tomb to be governor of this state.
And this was the election of November 2007.
This was in 2007.
Things have changed in the Commonwealth of Kentucky politically from when you started out. I'm not a native of Kentucky, but I understand Kentucky was predominantly Democrat politically. I'm sure during your youth and your early days in politics and in office. By 2007, as a Democrat, was it unusual to be elected as a Democrat at that point, or was that a fairly a normal route for the voters to go?
Kentucky has, for some time, been what I would call a politically schizophrenic state. We tend to have our federal politicians, the ones in D.C., Republican, and most of the time your state politicians in charge are Democrats. And we've ended up having a Republican governor about once every 20 or 25 years. Now, that may be changing. Certainly, Kentucky is a conservative state. And, you know, the Democratic Party, I would be the first to admit, the party, at least on the national level, has sort of lost its way. We've forgotten the basics of what our party is all about. And to cure that, we've got to get back to the basics. You know, when you look at what the Democratic Party stands for, the vast majority of people agree with that. They, you know, we stand for a good public education for our kids, an opportunity to have a good job and to get ahead and get your share of that American dream, public safety, being able to be safe in your home and on the streets. Those kind of things are the glue that has held the Democratic Party together for a long, long time. And that's what we've got to get back to if we're going to once again, make decisions and run things in states and across the country. In 2007, I ran a very nonpartisan campaign, quite honestly. I got out and I went into every part of the state, and my message was simple. I said, look, I don't care if it's a Republican idea or a Democratic idea. If it's a good idea, then we ought to get together and do it. And I'll tell you, I got a standing ovation in the most Republican areas as well as the most Democratic areas by that statement, because what I find out there is that people are extremely frustrated with our political system today. They identify less and less with political parties, and they're just looking for people with some common sense who are willing to sit down and work with each other, work across party lines, talk to each other, and then make some good things happen. And they're frustrated that that's not going on. And when they see someone offering that kind of approach, I think it's very attractive to them.
So I guess by most people's assessment, you would be a moderate Democrat. And assuming that someone of a more liberal or a progressive, for lack of a better term, approach might not be able to be elected in Kentucky. Has that shifted from your point of view? I mean, what will it take for another Democrat to be elected following the Matt Bevin administration, for instance?
Getting back to the basics, getting back to talking about what people really care about and convincing them that you care about them. It's about jobs. You know, it's about health care for our people. It's about the kinds of things that affect you in your home and affect your family and affect your kids. You know, we need to be making sure that people understand we stand for a good quality public education, and we're not going to let anybody take that away from our folks, because that's the key to success. And we want to make sure that there aren't any obstacles out there for the opportunity to have a good job and to earn your part of the American dream. You know, you can't make people successful, but you can certainly create an atmosphere to where if they apply themselves, they can be successful. And that's what Democrats have always stood for. And if we get back to talking about that message, we'll win.
I mean, the most recent election turned around a situation where Kentucky had been the only southern state, I guess, with a Democratic-controlled wing or Democratic House of the General Assembly. Is it possible that Kentucky is going to just remain a Republican state from this point forward with the control that we currently have?
I think that depends upon what happens in the future. You know, you had a phenomenon called the Trump candidacy, and that just attracted a whole lot of Democrats as well as Republicans in Kentucky. Why? Because he was out of the box. I had a lot of people say to me, you know, Governor, he's probably lying to us, and he probably won't do what he says, but at least he's not a part of that mess in Washington. And maybe, just maybe, he'll be different than the folks that are up there right now. Now, that was the way a lot of people ended up making their decision, both Democrat and Republican. I think they're starting to see maybe they don't like the decision they made, but we'll see how that plays out. But it's that frustration, John. It's that frustration with our system and the way that nobody will work with each other anymore. And that's really what this book, People Over Politics, is all about. How you can do this, how you can govern effectively and bring people together.
We're going to take a short break. Former Governor Steve Beshear is the author of People Over Politics. And this week's program is a special edition of the show with Governor Beshear. We'll be back after a short break. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen, and this week a special edition of our program, a recorded show with former Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear, served in office 2 terms, 8 years, as Governor of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and has just this past year, during 2017, released People Over Politics, his book with some observations about politics, about governing in the 21st century, and the ability of people to work together, crossing party lines. I guess, would that be, Governor, what your primary thesis is in this book, that we do not have to stay within partisan categories?
That's exactly right, John. We've got to break this mold that we're in now of toxic politics, of rank partisanship, because we can see what happens. Nothing nothing is happening in this country right now because everybody in Washington is yelling at each other instead of trying to work with each other. You know, they spend all day up there, every day, shouting and yelling at each other, and then they leave at the end of the day, get on the telephone, raise money so that they can win elections again and walk in the next day and shout and yell at each other again. I don't know why anybody wants a job like that. You know, it is time, if we're going to make this country work again, then it's got to be on a bipartisan basis.
We're recording this program before it's broadcast. Just the day before our recording, there was a terrible tragedy in Virginia. Some members of Congress were practicing for a congressional baseball game, and it apparently was rooted in partisan politics or extremist politics. Governor Beshear, your reactions to that, the person who apparently was attached to a certain ideology and opposed to Republican politics taking such a terrible action?
Well, we obviously don't know all the ins and outs of that situation other than it's very tragic. And fortunately, it wasn't more tragic. But I have to think that perhaps a part of the motivation is this toxicity of the political debate now. Are we getting to the point to where people feel like the only way we can get anything done is by violent means? I mean, for God's sakes, if we all get to that point, this country's gone. So it is definitely time to pull back the meanness, the nastiness, the lack of civility. You know, when was there a time when we could disagree without being disagreeable? I mean, that's the way our system is set up. It's all about compromise. It is not set up to where it's my way or the highway. And it takes a lot of people sitting down together and finding common ground to make our system work. And we got to get back to doing that.
Where does this toxicity come from? The 2016 election was certainly, the presidential election was certainly seen as perhaps the most toxic at least in modern history. I'm sure there were other circumstances of very extreme situations. But was that election and the environment of that election a cause or an effect?
Well, I think it is a furtherance of what's been going on for a good while. And look, off and on throughout our history, you've had toxicity in politics. I mean, you can come up with examples over the last 225 years or so. But there have always also been times when things kind of settle down. You have the Ronald Reagan talking with the Tip O'Neill, the Republican and Democrat, behind closed doors over a glass of bourbon and figuring out how to get things done. I think the latest trend, in my mind, started in about 94 when Newt Gingrich and that group took over the House for the Republicans with the Contract for America, I think it was called. And they decided to adopt a confrontational kind of politics. I mean, we're gonna actively confront you with every disagreement that we have. And it seems to have started there, and it hadn't quit since then. Instead of us, sitting down after campaigns are over, look, they're partisan campaigns are, and that's fine. That's our system. But once they're over with, people expect us then to think of ourselves as Americans first and Democrats and Republicans second. Now, politics is always going to be a part of that process, but it does not have to dominate that process. Actually, people think when they elect you that you're going to go up and your first priority is to be doing what's best for them and not what's best for yourself. But I think we've got more and more politicians these days who are thinking of one thing, reelection. You know, whatever it takes for me to get reelected is what I'm going to do, and I'll say anything, do anything in order to keep this good job I've got. And boy, you know, if we don't clean house with some of those kind of people and get some people in these positions that are going to put our people first and themselves second, then, I think this country will keep going downhill politically.
Am I naive in thinking that Kentucky has been a pretty good model of bipartisan cooperation? My sense has been that when the House was controlled by Democrats and the Senate was controlled by Republicans, the Speaker and the President were getting along just fine. Even during this most recent General Assembly, under both houses being controlled by Republicans and a Republican governor. It seems that Democrats and Republicans are working together. How do you view that?
Well, certainly Kentucky has been a model for this kind of process working. As I mentioned, during my 8 years as governor, and I use a lot of examples in my book to illustrate this, a Republican Senate, a Democratic House, a Democratic governor. But after elections were over with, we did some great things for this state. You know, we moved our education system into the top 10 in the country in terms of high school graduation rates. We raised the dropout age in Kentucky from 16 to 18. We took our college and career readiness rate from about 32% to 68%. You know, we made some great strides in education and in economic development. My last 2 years as governor, we won a very coveted award called the Governor's Cup from Site Selection Magazine out of Atlanta for being the top job-creating state per capita in the country for 2 years in a row. And then, of course, in healthcare, I mean, we were the model for the nation. We actually ended up making healthcare, affordable healthcare, available to every Kentuckian for the first time in history. So look at all those great strides we made, and we couldn't have done all of that if we had allowed rank partisanship, such as is going on in Washington right now, to dominate. We simply couldn't have done it.
I'd like to go there, talk a little bit about Kentucky's implementation of what has become known as Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. When that occurred, the states were given the option of setting up their own health care exchange, a way for people to interact, I guess, on the state level and achieve the health care that had been promised in that federal legislation. Why did you take the action that you did in terms of establishing an exchange here in Kentucky when other states, many of them, have chose to just participate and sign up with the federal system?
You know, John, when I became governor, if you'd have told me that you'll be remembered most when you're out of office for what you did in health care, I would have laughed at you, because health care is such a complex issue and such an expensive issue that no state by itself can really make a huge difference. Secondly, Kentucky's health is abysmal. I mean, you look at any ranking, any statistic you want to, and our people are some of the least healthiest people in the country. So obviously, you know, if you can do something about that, you ought to. But I never thought I'd have the opportunity to really affect that. And then along came the Affordable Care Act. Now, is it the best way to do this? I don't know. There are dozens of ways to do this. But what I do know is it was the one tool that I had looking me in the face when it passed in 2010 that I could actually change the course of history for Kentucky in terms of health care for its people. And so I grabbed it. You know, I owed it to the people of this state. If there was a way to provide them affordable health care for the first time and to make their lives better, I owed it to them to try to do it. To me, it wasn't Democrat or Republican. It wasn't political. It was what the people of this state needed. And so I sat down and we had two decisions to make. One, you're going to do your own exchange or you're going to have the federal exchange. Well, quite honestly, that was an easy decision because every shareholder, every stakeholder in Kentucky wanted a state-based exchange. All your providers wanted it. Your Chamber of Commerce wanted it. Everybody, the business community, because they felt like that we could design our own exchange to fit Kentucky better than just a cookie-cutter kind of approach that the federal exchange was going to be. The second decision I had to make was tougher because that was to expand Medicaid. And I had to know what this is going to do to my budget. What's this going to do to Kentucky? Is it going to bankrupt it? Can we afford it? And so I commissioned PricewaterhouseCoopers, an internationally known actuarial firm, to come in and do a study. They sat down after 6 months and said, Governor, you can't afford not to do this because over the next 8 years, it's going to funnel about $15 billion of new money into your economy. You're going to create 17,000 new jobs, and it's going to have a positive impact on your budget. So on that basis, I made the decision then to expand Medicaid. Now, I didn't stop there. A year in, after we implemented it, I asked Deloitte Consulting to come in. I said, now we've got a year's numbers. actual numbers. Tell me again, make some more projections and tell me where we're headed in terms of affordability. They came back in and said, Governor, PricewaterhouseCoopers, the first study was wrong because they weren't optimistic enough. They said, you know, they told you you were going to create 17,000 jobs over 8 years. You've already created 12,000 the first year of implementation. And it's going to be like $40 billion new dollars into your economy. It's going to have a positive impact on your budget. You can't afford not to continue to do this. And look at the results, John. In the first 18 months, we went from having over 20% of our folks without any health care insurance down to 7%. We were the model of the nation. I mean, we had the biggest drop in uninsured in the country. We also had a huge drop in uncompensated care. You know, all the providers have to provide health care even though you can't pay for it. So it'd been costing them, they had about 25% uncompensated care. That dropped to 5%, less than 5% in about 2 years' time. So a tremendous success story.
Critics of Obamacare and, of course, the Kentucky Connect brand, which is what you created, would say that healthcare still remained expensive because of high deductibles and the fact that many of those people who previously were uninsured, yes, they may have insurance, but it's insurance that doesn't really kick in until the deductibles have been paid out of pocket. Would there have been another way, a better way to implement truly affordable health care that could have made it more accessible to everyone?
Well, I would submit to you, John, that it is still truly affordable health care for most people. There are a segment of people that are just above the subsidy line where you can't get subsidies to buy your policy, and their premiums are too high. And, you know, there needs to be tweaks to the Affordable Care Act, no question about it. I mean, it's not perfect. It's just like with the Medicare law back in 1965 when we passed it. It took about 5 years of tweaking it and changing it to get it to where it was really, you know, where it ought to be. And that's what we ought to be doing with the Affordable Care Act, instead of just saying we want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Because if you really want everybody in this country to have affordable health care, then you take what we've got and you massage it and you tweak it and get it to where it'll be better for everybody. We have about 500,000 Kentuckians today who have health care coverage, 400,000 of those under expanded Medicaid, and 100,000 with your policies through the exchange. And the vast majority of them are extremely satisfied with what they have. As you've said, and as I agree, you know, you need to work on some of the remaining issues with it. But we've got a success story here that just needs to get better and not worse.
The current president and Republican critics of the Affordable Care Act say that the Affordable Care Act is self-destructing, that it's going to be unworkable and needs to be replaced on the federal level. I believe they point to the fact that insurance companies are pulling out of the program. And as I mentioned, the cost of coverage as well as the high deductibles. What would you say in terms of that allegation that the Obamacare is going to self-destruct?
Well, the Affordable Care Act can down the road self-destruct if the Republicans continue to deny the parts of the program that were set up to help it transition. You know, from the very beginning, when the Affordable Care Act was passed, the Republicans in Congress set out to cause it to destruct if they could. They cut out of the budget the transition payments that insurance companies were supposed to get over the first few years to even things out, because you've got a lot of sick people who all at once are going to be in the health insurance market for the first time. And everybody understood that. And so there had to be about a 5 year or so transition period, and funds were provided in the act to do just that. What happened? The Republicans controlled Congress and they started systematically pulling all the different things, the support mechanisms that would help the act to be implemented in the appropriate manner. If they sit on the sidelines and refuse to do the tweaks that are necessary, Yes, it may collapse, but it's going to collapse because of them. It's not going to collapse because of any inherent problem with the act itself, but because the Republicans in Congress refuse to step up and do the things that are necessary to make it continue to go. Insurance companies are pulling out of the marketplace right now for one reason: uncertainty. You know, insurance companies, like any other company, I mean, they owe their shareholders, making good decisions. The bottom line has to be good. And when they don't know what the program's going to be, which they don't right now, and they haven't known for about the last 2 or 3 years because it's been repeal and replace out of the mouths of the Republicans, but it's all been repeal. Nobody knew what they're going to replace it with, and now what they see is that the programs that the Republicans are putting out are going to cut about 24 million people off of health care. I mean, and that people 50 to 64, their premiums are going to go up about fivefold under the Republican plan. Now, does anybody want that? The latest poll I saw said nobody wants that. And so the uncertainty's out there, and until we get our act together, the insurance companies are going to sit on the sidelines. And I can't really blame them, because they just need to know what the game is and what it's going to be long term, and then they'll figure out how to make money and how to participate.
Help me to understand again the role the governor played in the creation of the Kentucky Health Exchange, Connect, as it became known. Was that something you were able to do unilaterally as the way the Affordable Care Act was set up, and therefore Governor Bevin was able to unilaterally turn that around pull out of that program?
Yes, I was able to create the Connect Exchange system, a state-based health exchange system, by executive order.
So not with the General Assembly approval?
No, it didn't need the General Assembly approval. And so Governor Bevin did the same thing. He just reversed it. And, you know, it's the system isn't as good because of that, but it's still going to be okay. People have to learn to use the federal system now, and it's not as easy to use as our state-based system. Our state-based system was also a one-stop shop. You could go on and plug your numbers in, and it would say, oh, you qualify for Medicaid. Click this button and sign up for Medicaid. Or, no, you make too much to qualify for Medicaid. Go over here and start shopping for your policies. The federal exchange doesn't do that. I mean, it'll tell you if you qualify, but then you've got to go and find some place here in Kentucky where you can actually sign up. So it's harder on Kentuckians under the federal exchange, but it's still workable.
We're going to take another short break. We are here for another 20 minutes or so on this week's Eastern Standard, a special edition of the program with former Governor Steve Beshear, author of the book People Over Politics. We'll continue talking about politics and perhaps the relationship of state administration to federal government as Eastern Standard continues on the WEKU stations. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen, and pleased to be speaking with former Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear. Governor Beshear has recently released his book, People Over Politics. Governor, many Democrats during the re-election campaign of 2012, and then during the presidential election of 2016, many Democrats were very cautious in the way they endorsed the candidate who was running for re-election, or the Democratic candidate, Hillary Clinton. Your view on the Democratic candidates who've run for presidency in the most recent years?
Well, again, I think the National Democratic Party has sort of gotten away from talking about the issues that really matter. If you want to win in Kentucky and in the middle of America, you've got to talk about jobs and health care and public safety, the things that are on people's minds all the time. And I think now President Obama was successful. Hillary Clinton was not. But when you look at those elections, you see that Democrats either win or lose in about 18 states because of the Electoral College. And they don't even campaign in most of the rest of the states in the country. My position is that you cannot continue to be a national party if you aren't competitive all across this country. And the way we're competitive is by getting back to the basics and talking about things that really matter to American people. You know, that's why national Democrats haven't been successful in Kentucky. And that's why local Democrats have, is because we understand what's on people's minds, and that's what are that's what's on our minds too, and we know that that's what's important to address.
Many people in Kentucky and in this region, the Appalachian region, were very critical of the Obama administration for its environmental policy, declaring that the president and the administration had staged a war against coal and that their policies were harmful to the economy of our region. How do you feel about that? And the current efforts, the current president elected to a great extent by promises to bring the coal mining industry back into prominence and to restore jobs that have been lost over the last couple of decades.
Well, coal has been one of the very important economic foundations for Kentucky for a long time, both in the western Kentucky and eastern Kentucky coal fields. And I've been a big supporter of the coal industry. At the same time, I'm not a science denier. I believe that global warming is happening and that climate change is happening and that human beings, as well as a lot of other factors, are a part of causing that to happen. And obviously, burning coal, burning oil, burning any kind of fossil fuel throws CO2 and other things into the atmosphere and have some effect on global warming. And so, you know, to me, it was a matter of sensible approaches to the future. Number one, coal has supplied and still supplies a big part of the energy that America needs to be the greatest country in the world, and particularly in the manufacturing area. And that's very important here in Kentucky to have cheap electricity to attract jobs and to attract manufacturing companies to the state. At the same time, we need to be looking down the road and investing in clean coal technologies and in other technologies that will help us to continue to be able to utilize that resource. Now, the thing that the Republicans were very successful at is simplifying this issue down to merely, if you're saying that coal is doing anything bad, then we're against you. Well, you know, that's not the way the issue should be phrased, but that's the way they were able to get it phrased. And it really neglected to look at all of the different factors that have caused the precipitous decline in the coal industry. Obviously, the regulatory environment is one of those factors. But one of the biggest factors is the rise of the availability of natural gas. The marketplace, all at once, is flooded with very cheap natural gas. And that's the way it's going to be from now on because of the fracking process. And when you can, when big utility companies, the big consumers of coal, can buy natural gas for a fraction of what they have to spend to buy coal and to burn coal, guess what's going to happen? You know, they're going to go get natural gas. I mean, it's just the economy that's going to cause that. So,
what are the possibilities for Kentucky, for instance, even to adopt alternative fuels?
We pushed during my 8 years to try to expand our solar capacity and our wind capacity, all the alternative fuels, but none of that is going to take the place of the big demand that this country has for energy that fossil fuels provide right now. Now, you know, you've got nuclear out there that some people like, some people don't like, but you've got natural gas and you've got oil and you've got coal. And right now, although burning all of those creates environmental problems, natural gas doesn't create as much as coal does. And it's cheaper. So your big customers right now are gravitating toward natural gas. Now, I tried during my time, number one, to defend the coal industry in terms of, look, let's take our time and make sure that instead of just putting the clamps down, that we develop, you give us time to develop the clean coal technologies we need to have in order to keep being able to burn coal and keep our people employed. But, you know, the Obama administration chose not to take that approach. And then when natural gas hit the marketplace like it did, I mean, we went from something like 15,000 coal jobs to 6,000 coal jobs in a matter of 2 years. And you talk about devastation for families. You know, I mean, people that had done this all their lives and been able to provide for their families all at once are unemployed, and they don't have any reasonable expectation of being reemployed. We tried during the course of the last part of my administration when that happened. I got with Hal Rogers, a Republican congressman. We formed up a group called Shaping Our Appalachian Region, or SOAR. And the very purpose of that was to try to begin diversifying our economy in eastern Kentucky.
In the very few minutes we have remaining with former Governor Steve Beshear, a lot of other issues still remain out there. And there are some serious issues of tax reform, the estate pension system, which seems to be a thread running through the most recent years of governing in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. There's still education issues floating out there. Let's talk about the pension reform issue. Is it as serious a problem as those currently in office say it is?
Well, there's a chapter in my book on this. And it's basically called The Sky Is Not Falling. You know, we've got Chicken Little out right now, all these folks yelling that the sky is falling. Look, the pension system has issues, and the unfunded liability is a serious problem, but every state has that problem. And you need to understand what they're talking about. When they're throwing around these big numbers, $31 billion, $35 billion unfunded liability, people need to understand that's not a real number. That's a guess. What that is that if the pension system were shut down tomorrow, then these actuaries sit down and say, okay, how much money would it take to pay out every single person that is either in retirement right now or is working right now and in the system until the very last person that you owe anything to is dead? How they come up with that number is they look out over 30 years and they make assumptions. They say, okay, how long is each one of these people going to live? Are we going to have recessions? Are we going to have depressions? Are we going to have wars? What's the interest rate going to be over the next 30 years? And on and on and on, dozens and dozens of assumptions that they're guessing at. And then they assign numbers to that and they come up with this number they call the unfunded liability. Well, look, all you've got to do is change one of those assumptions, and you change that number. Now, there is some issue and some problem there somewhere. I mean, some number out there is accurate, but nobody really knows what it is. It's a big one. And what you have to do to solve a problem like that is a long-term solution. You have to sit down and come up with a solution that over the next 20 to 30 years is going to get you back in the right place. And that's what all the experts will tell you. We did that in 2013. We brought the Pew Foundation, which has worked with almost every pension system in the country, into Kentucky. They helped us develop a plan. And at the end of that session where we enacted all of that, Republican leadership, the Democratic leadership, the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, everybody said, we've done a good job. And if we stick with this plan over the next 20 years, then we'll work our way out of this. Well, guess what? Now, all at once, 2 years later, these people are saying the sky is falling again. Why? Because they've decided to change some of the numbers again. They're letting political folks come up with the numbers. Hmm. And so there's agendas. Everybody's got an agenda in politics. So what my message is yes, there's a problem. Yes, you need to have a long-term solution. But this issue should not be allowed to work as a vacuum cleaner, to suck up all the money that ought to be put into K through 12 education, to higher education, to economic development, to public safety, and to health care in this state. There's no reason for that. And if that's what they're doing, trying to create such a crisis, in quotes, that we can take all this money out of everything else and throw it in the pension system, then that's going to be bad for this state.
We're expecting Governor Bevin to call a special session of the General Assembly either late in the summer or early in the fall. Tax reform is the major issue. To what extent do you think that the state's tax system needs to be reformed, and on what direction does it need to go?
We need tax reform, John, and I worked on that while I was in office.
Why do we need that? Because
we don't have enough revenue. We don't have enough revenue to invest in education and in health care and in these other things that we need to improve. what you have to do is broaden your tax base. And we had a task force that was chaired by Lieutenant Governor Jerry Abramson that came up with, 40 or 50 different recommendations that we could do and create in the end more revenue without raising tax rates, because you broaden, for instance, what the sales tax applies to. You don't have to raise the sales tax, but you broaden it to apply to other purchases as well as what it is now. You make changes like that. You can tweak a lot of things and create a lot of revenue. The thing that scares me about some of the talk going around right now is that this administration may head in the direction of Kansas. You know, you've got this guy out there, this voodoo economist, Laffer, I think is his name. He worked with Ronald Reagan way back when. And as a result of, you know, his idea is you cut everybody's taxes, you cut business taxes, you cut everybody's taxes, and people are going to want to live here so much and develop business here so much that it'll just, all kinds of revenue will come in. And that sounds great. The only problem is it doesn't work. You know, he advised the Kansas governor to do this, and they did it out there. 4 years later, the Republican-controlled legislature just overrode the governor's veto and raised taxes because, I mean, they were going in the tank. They didn't have enough money to pave their roads, to keep their schools open. It's a mess. And I'm afraid that's the same guy now, this Laffer, is the same guy advising this administration.
Governor, our time is very short, but I do understand that in your book, People Over Politics, you did address the issue of Kentucky's role in implementing same-sex marriage. And I guess a personal dilemma, were there some reservations on your part, son of a Baptist minister, and how you would approach such an issue?
Well, certainly my views on same-sex marriage has really changed over time. I mean, you know, this has been a transitional process all my life, just like on a lot of issues. You know, when I was born, back 70-something years ago, in most communities, you know, you hardly even talked about homosexuality, much less did anybody have any idea about same-sex marriage. So it wasn't even a blip on the radar screen. Now, over the years, times change, culture changes, and, you know, when I became governor, that issue started heating up, and then you started having all these lawsuits all across the country. And first thing I felt was that, you know, the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, needs to be the one to address this. And let's get a decision that will finally set whatever the rules are uniformly all over the country. Secondly, I felt like, although I had arrived at the point in my mind where I felt, you know, if two people love each other and they want to have a lifetime relationship and a legal relationship, then they ought to be able to have that relationship regardless of what their gender might be. But I also knew that the majority of Kentuckians didn't feel that way. As recently as I think 2003 or 4, about 74% of Kentuckians had voted for a constitutional amendment that banned same-sex marriage in Kentucky. So I felt like that for the vast majority of our people to accept a change like this, it would need to be their feeling that they had had their day in court and that the highest court in the land had spoken. And so our cases that came along in Kentucky, I directed our folks to appeal those cases, and they got up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and Supreme Court made that decision. And I think because of that, most Kentuckians accept it for what it is. It, you know, they may not agree with it, but they do feel like that, you know, it's been litigated out and let's get on with life. And so I think most people feel like that now.
We did put out a message on social media asking listeners if they had questions for the governor. And Christian writes, as a loyal young Democrat in Eastern Kentucky, how do we within the Democratic Party reconnect with rural and moderate voters without alienating more liberal firebrands, especially the ones in urban areas? Sounds like one of the issues addressed in your book, People Over Politics.
Yes, and that's exactly what we've got to do, put people over politics. We've got to get back to the basics. We've got to get back to talking about what Democrats stand for, and those things are the same thing that the vast majority of people stand for, including those folks in Eastern Kentucky. Listen, if folks in Eastern Kentucky want an opportunity at a better life, opportunity for jobs, opportunity for health care. The Democratic Party is the party that stands for that. The Republicans right now are trying to pass a health care bill nationally that's going to jerk health care away from most of those people in eastern Kentucky. It's just as simple as that. So, but we have not been delivering our message effectively in the way that we should, and we've got to get back to that.
Governor Beshear, I get the impression that despite all the problems and challenges on the federal level and even on the level of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, you're optimistic, you're hopeful about the future of our nation and our state and about political cooperation and political bipartisanship.
John, I'm optimistic because I believe in the people of this state and the people of this country. We've got wonderful people, and they want a better life. And they want their politicians and their government to be responsive to them. And I think that while right now we've got this rank partisanship and we've got a whole lot of politicians who are putting their own interest ahead of the people's interest, I think that at some point the people are going to say enough is enough. And they're going to rise up, and folks that have been putting themselves first are either going to have to change or they're going to get thrown out of office. And I think people are getting closer to that all the time, because you see these town halls right now, John. I mean, I've been really enthused by the fact that people will actually turn out. They'll go out and confront the politicians for the first time. And boy, the politicians, for the most part, don't know what to do about it. I mean, they're going, oh, my gosh, they're starting to pay attention to me. And the more that happens, the more responsive these folks will be.
Former Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear has been our guest on this week's Eastern Standard. Governor Beshear, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Governor Beshear is the author of People Over Politics. He tells us proceeds from the book are being donated to charity. Eastern Standard is a production of WEKU at Eastern Kentucky University. Associate producers are Julia Dake, Devonna Gaines, and Zach Redding. We're always glad to hear from you. Email us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. This program will be available as a podcast and for online listening from weku.fm, and will repeat on Sunday evening at 6. For WEKU and Eastern Standard, I'm John Hingsbergen.